Right now, I told him to.
American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And a good day to you. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Friday, February 4th, 2005. You can read along with me on my live journal, and you'll know it's time to turn the page when you hear me say, "Hey, get your filthy hands off my desert!" And be able to keep up with all current news links. This is a free broadcast. You're freely available to distribute this any way you see fit. You can burn it. You can put it in as many formats as you want. You can give it to people you don't know. You can broadcast it illegally on FM bands. Well, you know, you'll get in trouble when you do that, because that's why it's called an illegal broadcast. But you understand what I'm saying here. You can pretty much do what you want. Do dance remixes. I don't care what you do with this, because I do this for you, the great and powerful sir, which is, of course, the Internet. And I had a big crash. I had a huge crash and lost a bunch of my stuff. So a bunch of people sent me some links, and I responded to a bunch of emails, and then, bam, my little 266-77E here, or 770E, rather, decided to all lock up, and I was hoping that I might get the restore, but it didn't really happen, so bang, it died. So this is one of the reasons why, you know, I'd like to switch my laptop over to Linux, but I haven't really had the chance because I don't understand Linux, because I have no time to learn, which it sucks, you know? I wish there was, like, a really fast way I could learn Linux, like, you know, learn Linux in 20 seconds or something, like, ring, operator, I need to know Linux. No, like, if we could do that, that would just make life so much better for everyone, I think. And I think we could put Bill out of a job with that. So time for sit rep, though. I wanted to give you guys a bit of a situation report. Rant hits the East Coast. Come listen to Sean and James. As this is from Sim from the newsletter, actually, so I'll just read what it says here. Come listen to Sean and James as I speak on the subject of independent media. Sean Kennedy and James O'Brien from Rant Media will be speaking at the Adirondack Community College on Monday, February 7, 2005, on the importance of independent media. Bring as many people as you can to fit into your car, plug, because it's free. Also, we will meet and greet after the show for further questions you might have for us. There's also a link to a great coaster by Ricky Rocket where you can print out and let people know about the event. Time is at 12:30 p.m. to 1:50 p.m. The place at Dear Love Hall in Miller Auditorium at Adirondack Community College. The address is 640 Bay Road, Queensbury, New York. And the price, of course, is free. So, yeah, come on down. That's my radio announcer voice. You like that? It's pretty good. And I'm going to keep going with that radio announcer voice to go into the second part, which is about the Rant Meet. Rant Meet number 8. I guess Sim's been numbering these, you know. I'm too busy, you know, diving around inside my psyche to keep track of all these little details. If it wasn't for Sim, you know, you guys would never see a damn thing. You know, just so you know, Sim is so incredibly vital. Buddy, you know, you're the shit. Anyway, here we go. Rant Meet number 8 in New York City. Yes, there will be a New York City meet with Sean Kennedy and Samarian. We want to meet all of our East Coast fans. Make sure you check out the link for the latest news on the meetup. Also, either reply to this email, or let us know you're coming and reply. So reply to Sim, let him know that you're coming. Number 8, New York City, Tuesday, February 8th is when it's scheduled. It's going to be at 8 p.m. in New York City, New York, USA, and the actual place itself, we don't know. There's Penn Station, Citigroup Building, a meeting place. If anyone knows of a really cool little, you know, I don't know, cafe or diner, or I don't know how many people are going to go. I mean, how many people would go to meet us down there? I mean, I don't know how big we are in New York. Probably not that huge. You know, probably a select few. I'm looking forward to meeting the people at the show. You know, so if anyone knows of an area in New York, we'd go down and check out. That'd be really cool. Zubies, I think, was the place we went to in Vancouver, and that was stellar. That place was great. If you guys had a chance to make it out to that last Rant Meet, of course, I don't think anybody from the Vancouver one is going to be there, other than, of course, me and Sim. Getting run into the feedback here, we got a personal rant to start off with. What the fuck? One thing really pisses me off is this kind of, or any kind of, homosexuality is a bad thing. Let's get this straight. I'm straight. I know a lot of gay people. I live in the Netherlands. So I can't even avoid gay people if I wanted to. Homosexuality is such a common thing. And it's criminal to state you can't love that person because your mutual love scares me. It's so... oh, fuck it. Homophobias are retarded at best. And a message to W, the Pope, and extremist Muslims, etc. If gays are really bad, God, Allah, or whatever, higher powers you believe in wouldn't have created them at all. And that's from Astrophysics. Oh, pardon me, Astrofix, who sent me a ton of email and whatnot. So I thought that was pretty pertinent. That's a lot of people have that viewpoint. So I thought I'd crank that out. Another feedback here. Dear Sean, listen to Newsreel on Wednesday, February 2nd. Sean talked about people looking to him as a counterculture leader when he's not a leader so much as an indicator. Ooh, that's romantic. I'd like to be called an indicator. But I'm in a situation with only trivial similarity, but a title is still warranted. The term that I've found that best fits my situation is standard bearer. The standard bearer marches with the troops and makes himself a big target so the other troops can know where the formation is going. Having been lost in life myself, I know how important it is to have people to look up to and how nicknames and titles help form an image of that person. Maybe a standard bearer is something you can be comfortable with. Crunge sent me that, and I thought that was kind of neat, you know, because I can play a musical instrument. A lot of people don't know this. You know, for trivia, does anyone know what musical instrument I can play? I can play the bagpipes. Funny enough, yeah, you can imagine that. Not to be too stereotypically Canadian here, I've never actually, I shouldn't actually say I can play the bagpipes, because there's two parts to that. There's the chanter, which you have to become a ninja with before they give you bagpipes at the Kung Fu Scotland School of Bagpiping. And I've never actually gotten my hands on a set of bagpipes as such, but I'm pretty good with the chanter and I can screw around with it okay. So, in theory, if I could generate the 30 pounds of pressure to, you know, to crank up the bag, then yeah, you know, I could lay on the war horns pretty good. So I think that's kind of funny to be known as a standard bearer, which also kind of seems kind of vaguely Warhammer 40K. Am I way off here when I say that? I mean, that's pretty Warhammer 40K crunch. I like it. I like it a lot. I mean, because after all, I really see that's where we're going to wind up going if we keep going the way we are. If you haven't looked into Warhammer 40K, well, that's sort of where I think we're headed. The concept... oh, here's another one. Dear Sean, the concept of phlebotomy... I think people write me about this because they know I hate saying... I don't even know if I'm saying that right. Phlebotomy, the blood science, and police is abso-fucking-lutely terrifying. I've done the thing where you refuse the roadside test thing, and then the cops take you to the hospital. I did it because the cops who wanted to do it wanted to crucify me. I'm a Taoist, they're Nazi Christian. Anyway, I did the hospital thing to protect myself from overzealous Dukes of Hazzard cops. If they knock out the middleman, the cops are allowed to draw blood. Oh, what's this, cocaine? That'll be a DUWII and one possession of an illicit substance by consumption. End quote. Also, I'm extremely fragile in this regard, sort of. My veins are deeply burrowed into my arms, and there's times when I can't even find them. The thought of some stupid cop digging around inside my arm with a needle for a fucking hour isn't pleasant. Last time I had my blood drawn, it took a 20-year veteran nurse 8 bloody jabs to get the vein. One unfortunate night, I'll look like a heroin addict, which might be useful if they want to plant evidence. And that's from Melican. Well, you know, I would agree. You know, now, granted... you know, I gotta say that I don't believe cops are evil. Now, there are bad cops. Okay, and I do want to stipulate this. I don't believe that cops are evil. Just like I really admire a lot of everyone in the U.S. Army. I think they're great. I think that they're maybe following orders that are kind of fucked, and I'd like to see, you know, these people used in the right way that they should be used, you know? I want to make sure that, you know, clerks stay clerks and don't get given machine guns and told to go kill because nobody believes in a war anymore. But I think that, you know, generally, police are good, you know, because they're enforcing the law. Don't hate cops, okay? Cops are our friends. Believe it or not, they're the ones who are really legally allowed to be walking around with guns. So, you know, there's probably a few cops who, you know, would never admit it, never come forward. And for God's sakes, don't do it, boys. But I bet you there's a lot of cops out there who are starting to come over to our side, you know? And I bet you there's a lot of cops who are like, you know what, man, this is bullshit. You know, this isn't the America that I remember dreaming about. Willie Nelson's America. This isn't Johnny Cash's America. You know, this sure as shit isn't any of the Americas of the vision of people we respected in culture in the past. This sure as shit isn't turning into Hunter S. Thompson's America, and that guy probably understands more about America than anyone else. So, you know, don't hate the cops. There's a lot of cops on our side, okay? We want to win the hearts and minds of the police officers because, you know, realistically, when they come around to seeing the truth, which is, of course, what we're talking about, Well, they're going to be really bummed out about that, and we got to make sure that we can give these people some support. Now, here we go into the Dear Sean. One last little bit. Got a lot of feedback here. Thanks again for what you do. Anyways, I know you were in the Canadian Army in one or of the After Now episodes. You mentioned going to the French Foreign Legion. But I recently watched an SKTFM.TV show where you said you tried to join three armies. I was just curious, what was the third? I know it's kind of personal, you don't have to answer. I was just wondering. Anyway, thanks. The show's fucking awesome. Mad Mohawk. Okay, well, real quick. What happened there was in a nutshell, I found a dead guy when I turned about 19, decided that changed my life, my whole perspective, was going to be a scuba diving instructor, had a diving accident when I was out on a dive on a trip, met a guy who was an illegal alien from England. He turned me on to the idea of joining the French Foreign Legion. I flew to France, tried to join the French Foreign Legion, didn't get in because my eyes fell bad, jumped out of there, went, smuggled my ass over to England, got deported from England twice, tried to join the British Army, that didn't happen, got punted back here, went to the United States, tried to join their army, and eventually the Canadian Army called me up and said, hey, we want you. The first half of my life was dedicated to me wanting to be a soldier, and I was a very, very, very avid student of the art of war. This was something that I, you know, dedicated my entire life to, was as to be a warrior. This was my whole goal in life. And, you know, it's a hard time right now for those warriors out there that exist within the Army, and there's probably a few who listen. You know, and for those of you who understand what I'm talking about, you know, it's a hard time right now because there's not a lot of nobility left. There's not a lot of causes that we can stand for and say, hey, you know, what the hell? I went a PSYOPs angle myself, and this is what I'm doing. This is my operation. You know, but for the rest of you out there, you know, best to just, you know, watch and shoot. Stay low. You know, you want to don't get taken out because you got too bored and stood up and went for a piss. Okay, so just stay down. You know, our time will come. Now, on to the sort yourself out. Sean, I really want your input here at where I'm at in life. I have always been very balanced. Before I started to do my own research, I never strayed too far from the middle of the ground on anything. Now I've gotten older, my thoughts and opinions have moved out further to the extreme ends of the spectrum. The past few years, I've begun attending hacker cons. The fifth is hoped to be my latest, and I'm already looking forward to DEF CON this summer. So while I'm attending hacker conferences, there is this other side of me that goes to work, does my happy little job, where it just so happens I'm a blah, 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 and he's got an ID card. What I'm trying to say is I feel like I have two identities, some sort of Jack Tyler Durden thing. Most of my meat world friends know that I'm into information technology / security, but I can't even begin to tell them more details than that. While on the other hand, I know better than to mention I work for the government and anyone I know from the net. Now, don't get me wrong, when the chips fall, I know exactly where I'll be on the same time bills must be paid. I guess what I'm asking is this normal? I suppose that's the end of my question. I mean, I could go on about how I feel pressure from the family and other aspects of the meat world to succeed in normal sense. Lots of cash, big house, couple of kids, you know, pass the name down. But in all honesty, I'm not interested in that. I mean, I know a person is just defined only by themselves. They're not their job or their clothes or anything than who they are. Which is why those normal expectations don't work with me. But for some unknown reason, these normal ideas come to mind from time to time. Like I said, I just want to know if it's normal. If most people feel like they're living two separate lives, or am I just having problems deciding where I'm going in life? Any input you have is more than appreciated. And I'm not going to say his name, but it's someone that I baptized. And now that I'm seeing who this is, I really enjoy the name that I gave him. Okay, dude. I know exactly where you're coming from with this because I work, you know, for near minimum wage at a sweatshop factory for 8 hours a day. I'm there at 8 o'clock in the morning and I'm there till 4:30 in the afternoon. I get 2 15-minute breaks where, you know, I'm jacked into my laptop trying to get through all the mail. That's why you'll notice it's usually sent between 10 o'clock, 10:15, and 2:30 and 2:45, or maybe between 12 and 12:30. People who receive emails from me. Reason for this is because I do it on my lunch break. It's a hard time right now for the freedom fighter. It's a hard time right now for people who want to stand up and who are aware. I mean, being aware and having the knowledge of what I'm talking about here on Newsreel is very, very crippling. It's a heavy burden. It really is, you know. It's much easier to just turn on the TVs, sit down and, you know, watch some old MASH episodes and just, you know, kick back, you know, turn on the Space Channel and zone out to whatever sci-fi stuff is going on. You know, that's great, and we love that. I love anime. I just bought the 10-disc set of Matrix. You know, I love that stuff. But there's a problem here. You know, we need to make sure... It's good to unplug. Now, don't get me wrong. It's good to unplug, and you got to go do that. Okay? But we have to, as... Well, as the resistance, I guess. As the people who stand for art and for culture and for freedom. For true freedom. We have to, you know, hold on to this. And we have to stand up. And it's a long suffering. You're right, man. It is hard. You know, you got two lives on the go. And, you know, is this normal? Of course it's normal. Of course it's normal. We all got bills to pay. You know, I've got these fantastic dreams of, you know, buying boats and forming international, you know, water server bases and all sorts of crazy stuff like that. You know, I've got great ideas. But at the same time, if it wasn't for my wife being, you know, a financial ninja, you know, I'd have no clothes, you know, because we don't make a lot of money. Luckily, we don't have any kids. You know, so we can do okay. It's difficult. You've got to, you know, have your real life concerns in there too, and it's hard. It's very hard, and that's why, incidentally, everyone's so encouraged, you know, go get married and crank out pups, because the minute you got kids, you ain't got time to worry about nothing else. You know, you got to worry about looking after your kids. You got to get a babysitter, blah 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 blah. So if you don't have kids, which a large percentage of people are not doing, they're choosing not to have kids. You know, they feel like, oh, yeah, and incidentally, whether or not you have kids passing down the family name, who gives a shit? Who really cares? You know, so what? A name is a name. You know, you can hang on to a lot of outdated dogma and stuff like that, you know, your genetic lineage and all the rest of that bullshit, but it really, really doesn't matter. You can choose to identify yourself with that or not, but does that mean that if I was, you know, didn't know my parents and I was adopted? I've always marveled at people who were adopted and really wanted to find their natural parents. You know, and I always wondered, why does it matter? Like, why do you care? You know, who gives a shit who your natural parents are? Let's worry about who you are. And you're seeking self-understanding by looking for your parents, but, all you know, wherever you go, there you are. So why don't you just look at yourself and, you know, dial it in. Now, granted, I know both my parents, so I have no right to say that. And I really hope I don't piss off anybody adopted. You know, I really do. I'm not meaning to offend anyone here, but that's just kind of how I think about it. You know, a lot of people, maybe that might help some adopted people. I don't know, you know, so that they don't feel so driven to, you know, find their parents and whatnot. But it's a difficult thing you're doing here, man. It's a difficult thing to be working where you're working and living this double life. And, yeah, you got to keep doing it. But the way I'd look at it is think of yourself as like, kind of a secret agent. You know, a lot of our personas are based upon, you know, images we create for ourselves. And if you look at, you know, really with the job you have and what you're into, you're kind of a superhero. You know, really. And a lot of superheroes would look at what you're doing, you know, and a lot of superheroes would say, oh, I'm not really a superhero. I'm just doing my thing. I don't think I'm doing anything really special here myself, but I am. You know, I'm talking to people all over the world. I'm talking to you. You know, so that's got to mean something. It's guys like you, man, who can, there will come a time and you'll hopefully still be around and in the right place at the right time and be able to help someone out. And maybe you'll never get credit for it, but at the end of the day, you know, it's fighting for the truth and justice and light and all that good stuff. I believe in that. I do. Yeah, all that good comic book Batman justice stuff. I'm right into that. I believe it's true. You know, I think that's what, you know, the American dream is really all about. It's about fairness and goodness and fair play and whatnot. I mean, I don't really know, but that's sort of my take on it. You know, freedom and all that kind of jazz. Now, enough of that. Into the news. Don't drink the water. Traces of the antidepressant Prozac can be found in the nation's drinking water, it has been revealed. Is this on CNN? I bet it's not. An environment agency report suggests so many people are taking the drug nowadays, it is building up in rivers and groundwater. A report in Sunday's Observer says the government environment watchdog has discussed the impact for human health. A spokesman for Drinking Water Inspectorate, DWI, that's too funny, said the Prozac found was most likely highly diluted. Oh, yeah. The newspaper says environmentalists are calling for urgent investigation into the evidence. It quotes the Liberal Democrats' environment spokesman, Norman Bake, MD, as saying, the picture is emerging and it looked like, quote, a case of hidden mass medication upon an unsuspecting public, end quote. Norman Baker, MP, okay, the Liberal Democrat environmental spokesman said, quote, it looks like, quote, a case of hidden mass medication upon the unsuspecting public. Holy shit. Okay, and this is like Norman Baker's an MP. Wow. what the hell? How much writing do you need to see on the wall? He says, it's alarming that there's no monitoring of the levels of Prozac or other pharmacy residue in our drinking water. Experts say the antidepressant drug gets into the river waters system via treated sewage water. The DWI said the Prozac, known technically as fluoxetine, fluoxetine, F-L-U-O-X-E-T-I-N-E, okay, you figured out, was unlikely to pose a health risk so long as it was watered down. Kiss my ass. The Observer says the revelations raise new fears over how many prescriptions the drug are given out by doctors. Well, a ton, dude. They're finding Viagra in fish now, too. In the decade leading up to 2001, the number of prescriptions for antidepressants went up from 9 million per year to 24 million per year. Okay? Holy crap. The Environmental Agency report concluded that the Prozac in the water table could be potentially toxic and said the drug was a potential concern. The exact amount of Prozac in the nation's drinking water is not known. Wow, doesn't that just make you want to go get yourself a nice tall cold glass of water right now and just wash your pain away, eh? Oh my God, that's terrifying stuff. Now, although that may be terrifying to you, that they're putting, you know, that it appears to be a mass medication on an unsuspecting public, if that doesn't trip you out, this one here takes the cake. This is now officially the scariest story I've come across. Okay, every so often I may do that. This is it. This one actually, you know, because I get pretty numb to all, you know, the loss of rights and everything. This one's a doozy. You know, for those good depression freaks who are really looking for a brain biter, oh, have I got one for you here. This one's a great one. How about depression? I love this. How about not only electronic brain implants, but how about pharmaceutical companies putting brain implants into your head to treat depression? U.S. regulators have given conditional approval to Cyberonics Incorporated. Now, I'm not making this. This is so Batman it hurts. Application to market an implanted device to treat depression. Holy shit. The company said Wednesday the VNS therapy system is a pacemaker-like device that delivers electrical impulses to the brain. Cyberonics already sells the implant for reducing seizures from epilepsy. The FDA approval was conditional on final labeling, protocols for post-marketing, doing a study, and patient registry, as well as compliance with quality system regulations and resolution of any outstanding monitoring issues. Now, isn't that interesting? How we're just going to slip this... You know, understand also that you're three signatures away. Well, in Canada, I don't know how many signatures you are in the United States, but in Canada, you are three signatures away from being losing all of your rights altogether and being declared totally medically insane. When that happens, the state can go, right, we'll experiment on good old Shano here. Dr. A, Dr. B, Dr. C, thank you. You're no longer a person. Straight jacket for you. Into the cell. We'll shave his head. It's already half gone anyway. And in goes the pacemaker electronic chip. Meh, meh, meh. You know, I could write a whole book just about that. But luckily, you know what, I've got so much faith in the WOGs and in people in general, and generally in Server, that even if that did happen to me, I'd probably walk outside of that mental hospital to get some, in my pajamas, some WOG in a tree somewhere with a Wi-Fi antenna, would hack my head, reverse engineer, and re-download all my rants. That's what I'm hoping. You have express permission to do that, if they ever grab me and start feeding me the dope. All right, anyway... Here's a little bit more information about Cyberonics. Who the hell are they? Cyberonics Incorporated was founded in 1987 to design, develop, and market medical devices for long-term treatment of epilepsy and other chronic neurological disorders using a unique therapy called vagus nerve stimulation. Stimulation is delivered by the VNS therapy system as an implantable generator similar to a cardiac pacemaker. Good God. The VNS therapy system delivers programmed intermittent mild electrical pulses to the vagus nerve 24 hours a day. The company's initial market is epilepsy, which is characterized by recurrent seizures. Blah, 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 blah. The VNS therapy system is approved for sale in European Economic Area and in Canada as a treatment for depression in patients with treatment-resistant or treatment-intolerant major depressive episodes, including unipolar depression and bipolar disorder, manic depressive. Okay, now, interesting how they say that. It's approved if you're treatment-resistant or treatment-intolerant. I'm not crazy. Yes, Mr. Kennedy, I'm afraid you are. No, dude. No. I've got the news. I've got the data. All the facts are right here. You just got to look at them. No, Mr. Kennedy, I'm afraid you're paranoid and delusional. No, you're resisting therapy. We're going to implant this chip in your head. Yeah, well, you're going to need a few more, you know, orderlies to give you a hand today. It's going to be a tough one. I swear to God, man. Never before have I ever so much identified with Sarah Connor. Really? This is just... The company is headquartered in Houston, Texas, and it has an office in Brussels, Belgium. In Houston, Texas, you say? Well, isn't that just outstanding? I'm really, really risky with, I mean, a lot of psychological disorders, not to get, you know, because Scientology always says, you know, no such things as being insane. No, that's bullshit. Like all of Scientology, it is bullshit. And there are some people who are medically fucked up, okay? There's not enough to warrant, you know, what is it, 21 million people in a 10-year rise of Prozac, you know, washing so much Prozac through our rivers that it's polluting our water and we've got really happy fish. You know, I'm not saying we're that far gone, obviously, but there is a need for, you know, some people who have problems, you know. But something like this, I mean, we're already getting warmed up to the idea and we're dumbing down our populace. Why not just start getting chip implants? I mean, the espionage aspects, if you want to get really scary about something like this, oh, yeah, you know, something could just happen and they could decide that so many people would have accidents or they could explode or stuff. I mean, you know, not to get totally way out there, but all you got to do is look at, you know, generally, because, once again, people are generally shit. And if you don't, you know, set down some rules to make sure people don't fuck things up, they will. Speaking of which, here come the biometrics. The growing number of bank account thefts involving stolen or forged bank cards is forcing financial institutions to adopt costly biometric technology to verify that only bona fide customers are using automated telling machines. They're bona fide. This is in Tokyo, by the way. But bank groups are adopting different technologies to protect their accounts, posing the problem of incompatibility on an industry-wide basis, despite the overall effectiveness of each system, experts and industry insiders say. ATM biometric systems can, for example, scan a particular physical trait, such as a palm vein pattern, to allow access to an account. In October, Bank of Tokyo Mitsubishi, which is single-handedly the scariest name of any bank ever, installed vein pattern recognition systems in some of its ATMs. Sumitomo Mitsubishi Banking Corp. plans to introduce biometrics-based system by March 2006. Mitsuho Bank has also shown interest. Once again, I apologize to all cultures of the earth for my murdering of your language. What prompted us to launch this system is overwhelmingly strong security it provides to our customers, BTM spokesman Hiroshi Hashimoto said. BTM system identifies customers by ATMs by scanning their palms. Users' vein patterns are stored in the integrated circuit-bedded bank cards. Well, that's kind of an interesting idea. You know, why not just throw the whole palm down? I mean, that's very sci-fi. I guess it's kind of cool. How do I feel about that? Well, again, I understand the need that we need to protect, you know, money and stuff like that. So it's not that I'm against technology. I'm not going Luddite over here. But what I'm afraid of is this technology falling into the wrong hands. You know, once your privacy is gone, it's gone. And the banks, of course, I mean, they are the prince of fucking darkness. Don't even kid yourself. You know, of all the evils in the world that exist, of all the corporations, the banks are the blackest bastards of the bunch. Because they, you know, really, the banks are the ones who control the cash. And that's what everybody's after, isn't it? You know, everybody wants the money. Show me the money. And then really, if you follow it, you know, you'll start looking into the, you know, who the real Illuminati is, who they, them, the they up there who control everything. That would be the banks. You know, that's what everyone's afraid to say on radio. You know, even George Norrie and Art Bell won't say it, but it is the banks, and we all know it. You know, the Bilderberg groups and all those types out there, you know, they won't put it on the air because they know it's forbidden. But it's the banks, man. Look who controls the money. Follow the money. And whoever controls the money, well, they're the ones calling the shots. It's pretty obvious. You don't have to have a degree. Anyway, you know I gotta cover this. You knew it was coming. Advertising by HARP. Yes, now, this is an interesting one. But for those of you who have lived under a rock and haven't picked up on this the last couple of days, by shooting intense radio beams into the night sky, researchers created a modest neon light show visible from the ground. The process is not well understood, but scientists speculate it could one day be employed to light a city or generate celestial advertising. Holy light pollution, Batman, sell your telescope now. Researchers with the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, or HARP, project in Alaska tickled the tickled. They just tickled the upper atmosphere to the extent that it glowed with green speckles. They tickled it with like a, what was it, a megawatt generator? The speckles were sprinkled amid a natural display known as the Aurora Borealis, which is actually worshipped by most people in, you know, northern culture. And if you ever get a chance to see it, you'll understand why. There's a few things I've seen in life. Anyone who's ever been out in the real world, okay, has ever been out in nature, I've seen things in nature that I consider to be sacred that we shouldn't fuck with, and the Aurora Borealis is one of them, or Northern Lights, also known as. The aurora occurs when electrons from a cloud of hot gas, known as plasma, rain down from space and excite molecules in the ionosphere about 30 miles, 50 clicks up. And there's stories that it's actually come down, touched the ground, and stuff like that. Pretty wild stuff. A lot of legends from up there. The HARP experiment involves acres of antennas and 1 megawatt generator. Ah, there it is. The scientists sent radio pulses skyward about every 7.5 seconds, explains team leader Todd Penderson, Air Force Research Labs. The radio waves traveled up to the ionosphere, where they excited electrons and the plasma, Penderson told Live Science. These electrons then collide with atmospheric glasses, which then gives off light, as in a neon tube. Now, I heard about this, and again, I was listening to the radio the other night, this particular talk show, and this guy phoned in and he said, hey, you know, they were talking about this, and he said, you know those masers, you know, where you take a taser and put it so the tongs are almost touching and throw a laser beam through it, and then the light can travel down the laser beam and strike a target. You know those what they call them, phasers, or that's what they're doing with tasers now. That's the direction they're going. And they're like, yeah. Well, what that is a bridge, right? It's just a ionic bridge between the charge in, you know, the charge in connection for grounding, right? Yeah. Well, isn't the ionosphere and all that, isn't there like this massive charge up there? And if we create a bridge with these radio waves, like, isn't there a chance that this antenna, if they just tweaked it just right, could create the largest lightning bolt the world had ever seen and scorch the entire HARP thing off the planet, just wham, in one fell shot? And I wondered, you know, I don't know enough about the electricity. Maybe some people out there could, because I'd like to know. I wouldn't want anyone to die, but that would be ironic if they tried to fuck with the Aurora Borealis and then this massive lightning bolt just wiped them off the face of the planet. That's one of those kind of things where you get the Inuit shaman sitting back going, told you. You know, that's kind of the thing that happens. You know, it'd be interesting to know if that works. So any of you crazy, crazy math heads out there who are far more gifted with the calculator than I am, let me know if that's a feasible thing or not. Now, we have a mission. Our mission is to free the Eiffel Tower. You need to look no further than Mickey Mouse in the U.S. or Elvis in the U.K. to understand how copyright, for better or worse, affects the marketplace. But while Disney resorted to legal means to get more life out of Mickey, those that oversee the Eiffel Tower came with something far more clever. And this is kind of that meat cleaver clever. The Eiffel Tower's likeness had long since been part of a public domain, when in 2003 it was abruptly repossessed by the city of Paris. That was the year that SNTE, the company charged with maintaining the tower, adorned it with a distinctive lighting display, copyrighted the design, and in one fell swoop reclaimed the nighttime image and likeness of the most popular monument on Earth. In short, they changed the actual likeness of the tower and then copyrighted it. As a result, it is no longer legal to publish current photographs of the Eiffel Tower at night without permission. Technically, this applies even to amateurs. When I spoke to the director of documentation for SNTE, Stéphane Dieu, via phone last week, he assured me that SNTE wasn't interested in prohibiting publication of amateur photography on personal websites. It was just a way to prove to manage commercial use of things on image, so it didn't get into ways we didn't approve, said Mr. Dieu. So publishing nighttime photos of the Eiffel Tower may now be illegal. It isn't all that bad news for tourists. Well, isn't that nice? SNTE profits go back to the city of Paris, making it hopefully an even nicer place to visit. Well, I don't know, man. I don't know. Copywriting a monument like that? The Eiffel Tower isn't just about Paris. I think that kind of belongs to the world. And after a certain length of time, it kind of belongs to the world, you know? Did you think the Grand Canyon belongs to the United States, or does it belong to the world? You know, those two big, massive Buddhist statues that the Taliban blew up, were they the world's or were they Afghanistan's? Because we got to make a call on this. If we got pissed about them blowing up them statues, then we shouldn't be able to copyright monuments. They're just monuments. They need to stay there. We need to protect our history. You know, and not with, you know, we need to protect them from the core political, from this specific thing. Now, here's a reason to buy an old car. Now, I myself I love old cars, but I'll get to that in a moment. Good reason to buy an old car. If Los Angeles area scientist has his way, car chases become as antiquated as a horse-mounted cavalry. Oh, really? James Tatoian, chief executive of Eureka Aerospace in Pasadena, California, is developing a system that uses microwave energy to interfere with microchips inside cars. They'll hurt your car. Once the chip is overloaded with excessive current, this ceases to function and will gradually decelerate on its own. If you put approximately 10 or 15 kilowatts per meter on a target for a few seconds, you should be able to bring it to a halt. A death ray for your car. Most cars built in the United States since 1982, have some type of onboard microprocessor. Today, the processors are advanced enough to control functions such as fuel injection and GPS equipment. Eureka's aerospace high-powered electromagnetic system consists of a series of wires arranged in 5-foot by 4-foot rectangular array. The interface is emitted on a conical shape outwards from the device. Tatoian said that while he is not the first to come up with the idea of using electromagnetic interference to stop cars, he's been able to reduce the size and power consumption of such a device so that it would be more portable. It is small enough that it could be mounted onto a helicopter, ooh, there's a good one, or onto law enforcement pursuit vehicles, an application that interests Los Angeles City County Sheriff's Department. Eureka Aerospace hopes to have working prototype on the Sheriff's Department can test by late summer. The National Institute of Justice and the U.S. Marine Corps may also be potential early clients. The company's early tests indicate the car-stopping device should be functional at a range of 300 feet, 100 meters. So if the chopper's within 100 meters of you, it can shut your car down. Unless, of course, you have a car like Trevor. Trevor was my car. It was a 1970 Delta 88 convertible. And I think that, you know, all you flying monkeys out there in my land of crazy, you know, dreams of taking over the earth, the car I'm going to get, the next car I'm going to get, I'm going to, you know, sell what I got right now. And I'm going to try to get myself another large convertible car. Something older, something that I can look after, something that will run forever and probably drinks gas from a garden hose. But I don't care. I want an older car. The older cars have style, they have grace, they have soma, they have that ability to make you feel free. Is that bad of me to want an old car? No worse, I suppose, than trying to eat a steak once in a while. But I'm here to tell you, if you never had a large convertible car, you know, wait until I get one, and I'll pick you up, we'll go for a ride, and I'm sure that by the end of that ride, you will agree that large old convertible cars are beautiful things. That is something that we seem to be missing these days, isn't it? Isn't that something that seems to be somehow lost by the wayside? We all have this deep inner desire for something deeper, something more. This is something the cults really capitalize on, you know? All of them, you know, the Muslims, the Jews, the Scientologists, the Christians, all of them are all really, you know, they know that we have this desire for something more. This is why we turn to server. This is why we turn to the internet, to have a sense of community so that we, you know, have an identity, a peer group, if you will, that we can share our lives and our experiences with. It isn't just me. I mean, I'm probably, you know, the most expositionary, you know, freak that ever walked the earth. But realistically, everyone has that desire to be part of something greater, to be part of something, you know, important, so that it's not just, you're not just some chemical reaction of, you know, DNA spinning out of control and totally random, and then you'll die, and who will give a shit? But realistically, I mean, there's all kinds of people who've died all over the world and all throughout history that no one ever knew their name. They're gone forever. So now we just have, like, history to try to record their names, you know, so we know who they are so they can last, you know? H.P. Lovecraft, prime example. H.P. Lovecraft lived a very miserable life. The guy lived with his mom, died at an early age. He kind of was a pathetic dude. He was the loser in the basement. You know, that was who H.P. Lovecraft was. Yet the guy is revered today. At least he should be revered today. I think I revere the guy. And I think that gives his work merit. And in that sense, old Howard there, he's immortal. He's got role-playing games. There's a game coming out that everyone should buy to support, you know, the Lovecraftian ideas. And horror dreams, dark dreams, all that sort of stuff. It won't be long before that'll be the next target. You know, after they wipe everything out, they'll start taking out the dark arch, you know. If you ever are in for a rush, I mean, you're all probably too young, or, well, actually, I shouldn't say that, because I always think of my listeners as being younger, but now, from the emails I'm getting, there's people older than me who listen. But you remember those old comic books, The House of Mystery and Weird War Tales and stuff like that? These old, you know, gruesome, where none of the women could run, and always the men had, you know, burly chests, and they'd save the day, and all that kind of crap. And there was, like, hideous monsters everywhere, and it was great stuff. It was campy fun. And that's what, you know, everybody wants. They want to have fun and get back to the quote-unquote, the romantics. If you actually, you know, this is an interesting point. when you look at everything that we're searching for, the people who are searching, if you go to a dictionary, look up the term romantic in the dictionary, you'll find that it isn't just about, you know, romance. It has to do with thoughts and dreams and ideas and, like, Lord Byron. And this is what the Gothic movement is all about. And that's what the Goths are truly all about. It's about, you know, the anger is there now because we've strayed so far from, you know, the ideas of ideals and of dreams and of beauty and of art. We've strayed so far from that that, you know, Marilyn Manson's and stuff like that happen. And everyone gets very, very angry and they start, you know, forcibly rejecting ideas of other cultures and things like that, because we're hurt, we're angry that this is happening, and that's why there's so many problems, that's why there's so many people who are freaking out right now, you know, and that's why it's important we need to remember the things that are beautiful, like large convertible cars, you know, like barbecues. You know, I'm sorry. You know, if I'm pissing off all the people in the world, then that's fine. I don't care if you're barbecuing vegetables or meat or whatever, but, you know, sitting on a beach, playing a guitar, you know, making love in a field, driving around with the top down, wearing a Hawaiian shirt. You know, this is all the soma that life is about. Life is not supposed to be us, you know, bathing in the cathode rays of monitors. This is not what life's about. That's what I try to teach with patrolling. I mean, if I can just get people outside, you know, to experience what life is, to feel wind and rain against your face. I mean, have you ever had rain fall on your face? Think about it. When was the last time you looked at the sky? When was the last time you breathed deep the night air? And you got high enough in the city where you looked down and for just a little while you felt like you weren't just some cog in a machine, where for just a little while maybe you felt like like Batman, you know, where you looked out at the world and saw it with eyes that really could experience life around you. But we don't, because we're numb to it. You know, we're numb because we get advertising thrown on us. We get all this crap dumped on us, and there's no sense of freedom anymore. That's why, you know, Harley Davidson, who's, you know, now doing their image is completely, you know, they're marketed all to hell. But that's why, you know, the midlife crisis was, you know, you'd either go buy yourself a cowboy belt buckle and get all, you know, home on the range, or you'd go buy yourself a motorcycle, or you'd go get yourself a really fast sports car. These are all movements that, you know, people would do to try to gain some freedom in their lives. You know, and now, rather than, you know, buying Corvettes and buying Harley Davidsons and going out and people would laugh and say, oh, midlife crisis. Well, whatever, dude. Yeah, maybe he is having a midlife crisis. That's okay. Have you ever driven around in a large convertible car? You ever been on a Harley? You ever gone tearing down the highway? Have you ever run as hard as you could through the desert at night? I mean, have you done these things, or are you just going to live your life based upon, you know, decimal places and numbers? Is that what it's going to be? And at the end of it all, you'd be like, I don't know if I figured out what it was all about. I don't want to be left wondering, dude. You got one quarter. You put one quarter in the arcade game and you play hard. And it's a hard game, man. Maybe you started off in a better position. You know, maybe there's people listening right now. Probably most people listening right now are fairly what I would call privileged, because you have a computer. You have an access to this. Not only that, you have a computer. You have access to information. I mean, realistically, there's no reason why you, after listening to this program, you shouldn't be reading right now, unless, of course, you're at work and involved in a slavery situation. But because, realistically, you are the hope of humanity. The people listening to this, because you are the educated people. You're the ones who are free thinkers. You're the future. You're it. Maybe you're 55. Maybe you're 65. But I don't think age really matters anymore. It all has to do with intellect. There's people who I've met who are 14 who are far more mature than people who I've met who are 50. Hell, there's people I've met who are 15 who are more mature than I was. Of course, that's not saying much. I'm fairly mature. But still, you've got to look at, you know, the unity that can exist on the internet if we can just pull our heads out of our ass for a little while, you know? If we could get by all these biases and, you know, holier than thousness and, you know, more elite than thou and all the bullshit. You know, everyone's worried about status and all this kind of junk. I mean, I'm just as guilty, I suppose. I call myself the fucking man, don't I? You know? But realistically, if we just learn to accept ourselves, do what we want. I mean, personally, on a personal level, what do I want? Sean, what do you want? I want a large convertible car. That's pretty much it. And the ability to go for coffee and, you know, play with some toys. That's pretty much all I want. I don't want the you know, it'd be cool to have, a place to go. I wouldn't want to start a cyber cafe because I want to run a cyber cafe. I want to start a cyber cafe because I want a cool place to hang out. If I could find an existing cyber cafe that to hang out at, that's where I'd go. I just want to live and be happy and be entertaining and write my stories, and that's about it. And the one, you know, and I hate, you know, get all kung fu about it, but the one, the possession, which I really shouldn't say that I want, but I do, is a large convertible car. You know, is that bad? No, I don't think it is. I don't think it is. Maybe, you know, if you want something and people go, oh, I want a new BMW. Why? Well, because I saw that movie and that BMW was really cool in that movie. No, that's advertising. Okay, that's not what you want. You know, of course you have to have a place to start. You know, if you've never had a BMW and you drive in a BMW, you know, and you really like that experience, make sure that you base your wants and your needs. Well, your needs you can't really base on anything, but your wants, make sure you base your wants on experience, not on simulated experience. Or simu experience. Sim experience? Don't base it on what you think things are. Think about, base it on what you know. Don't go spending a lot of money on a car until you've ridden in that car. You know what I'm saying? Which sounds like it's very obvious. But people live their whole lives. They think, I'm going to join the army. Well, how many army people have you talked to? Well, none. Well, maybe you should look at that. You know, maybe you should talk to some people in the army. And when the old, haggard, scarred dude with the multiple tattoos puts his big hand on his shoulder and says, listen, son, you don't want to join the army. It's not what you think it is. When he says that to you, listen to the man. Okay? He's not saying it because he wants to screw you over. He's not saying it because he doesn't think you're worthy or you're not tough enough or that you can't hack it. Okay? I saw guys in there that should not have been in there. And there's kids going over to a war right now, going to get all shot up in the desert. And the ones that come back are going to be fucked up. There's going to be a lot of messed up kids coming back. And we can't just, you know, sweep them under the rug and hand them pills because that's what they're going to do. They're going to jack them with brain implants, for fuck's sakes. You know? If they happen to be resistant because they've been blowing away men, women, and children. With a general who thinks it's fun to go blow away people in Afghanistan. Anybody catch that news story? Now, granted, war sucks. And you have to have troops that are able to follow a leader and they have to be able to shoot people. Because that's what war is. It's horrible. And realistically, we should let the military fight the war and keep our civilian noses the fuck out of it. Because they know what they're doing. Because they're soldiers. That's their job. Now, what we need to do, though, is we need to make sure that the hand that is wielding the sword that is the army is not the hand of a madman. And currently, you know, our sword, the army, the armed forces, is taking a beating. It's taking a shit kicking, and a lot of young kids are getting hurt and killed. For what? For what? For freedom? Well, you know, maybe we've overtaxed ourselves just a bit. Maybe America can't, you know, try to free the world. You know? Maybe this is about oil and resources, and I can understand that, but there's got to be better ways. You're paying for it with the blood of children. Not to get back into the war, but, you know, it's kind of hard because there's people dying. You know, it's a horrible, horrible state of affairs. Back to the convertible cars. Soma is the... Incidentally, isn't it funny that just about every soldier, and for the soldiers who are listening right now and the ex-soldiers, they all know that when you're in the field and things are shit and you haven't slept or shit in 5 days, you always think about what? Either on the bike or in a large convertible car. Driving till the wheels fall off. Isn't that funny how that works, that simulation of freedom? And that's what I enjoy about them. Anyway, on to your daily hack. That would be the Gorilla Solar Power. This was provided to me by Barbed Wireless. This is a great, it's a PDF. Okay, so when you go to my live journal and click on it, make sure you check it out. And Gorilla Solar Power is a method for all of us so that, you know, when the power does fail, because that'll be the signification of the end, by the way, is when the power fails. When the power goes out, that's when everything is done. Because the power won't come back on, and after a while, you know, the radio stations will stop, and that'll be it, and everyone will be isolated, and we'll be like, oh, shit, you know, red pills for everyone. So, go check that out. It's very, very good, and I personally think, you know, now there's a lot of people who live in the cities and won't be able to do this, but it's a handy piece of data to have kicking around on your library. That's all I got for you today, but don't worry, Sim and I should be able to get shows off to you while we're in New York. And we can make sure that you get the information you need to stay alive. This is a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of Jesse, Anonymous, Jesse, a different Jesse, the Grey Ghost, Robert, Forleet, Michael, Matthew, Matt, Kevin, Derek, Jesse, Desert Runner, Eric, Speaker, Jeff, Malcolm, Peter, Keith. Let's make sure I keep them all in line here because I have to scroll down. Timor, WebLife, Richard, Greg, Evan, Matt, Drake, Levi, Ashton, David, Brian, Austin, Tara, Host Mojo, Jonathan, Adam, Mystic, Mark, Jonathan, Trevor, named after my car, Brandon, Art, Dire Mood, Peter, Jesse, Brandon, Justin, Matthew, Dylan, Lars, Daniel, Anonymous, and Philip. Now, if you'd like to help keep this Daily Brews news broadcast on the air so I can give you all the wonderful car tips that you want, you can visit rantmedia.ca and click on the Donate tab. Special thanks to my Netrunners, Anonymous Sources, Astrofix, Transix, Psychofish, Sylvanus, Rebel Whore, PolySci, Ricky Rocket, Wagga War, Barbed Wireless, Biggles, and Insane Blade. A Digital Baptism Today, Praetor, which whose name I hate anyway, is now Silich. And understand that the names I do kick out, by the way, are not just, you know, randomly generated. They do actually mean something. So, you know, I put a little bit of work into it. If you like the music in the background, make sure you check out Aslan Faction, someone I found on some news groups. Very, very cool. Now, until tomorrow, well, actually, until Monday, that's what server said. End of line.
Tell me I can't slow down. You tell me where I've gotta be. I spin into the darkness, but I swear that I can't see a thing in front of me. No, it's true, I'm not driving anymore. I can't keep up with you. You're closing in behind.